been far from a classic, but Aberdeen have done exactly everything right from this, beautifully inside, Watson, oh, the bar, Scanlon, yes, what a marvellous goal to finish this match. They have won. Alec Ferguson is on now in the penalty area, that is it. Aberdeen have definitely won the championship. Can you blame the man for going out of his mind temporarily?
Hello and welcome to the 77th By the Minute Aberdeen podcast. It's another positive week for the Dons as an awkward Scottish Cup encounter at Dingwall was negotiated successfully. Whilst it's a busy one too, with league games against Motherwell, that rearranged match after the 8-minute floodlight failure back in December, and a tie on the plastic at Kilmarnock coming up this Sunday. Joining me tonight to discuss that and much more, we've got Martin Clunas. Martin, how are you?
I'm great. Glad to be back.
Good stuff. And all the way from the Low Countries, it's Dons fan in exile, Gavin Mayer. Gavin, how are you?
Hi, guys. I'm doing very well, thank you.
So, yes, obviously, Gavin is another one of our expat fans. I think his day job is EU-related, but thanks to a rather bigoted and xenophobic pensioner vote, he probably won't be doing that for much longer. So, his...
Like it, no.
So his pastime, you may have seen his blogs featuring statistical analysis on topics such as tennis and indeed Scottish football. So later on in the show we'll have a chat with him and we'll focus in on basically what it's taken in past years to reach second place in the league, which has obviously got to be our goal, I think, for the rest of the season in the league. I think we can safely say that the title is probably just a little bit beyond us right now. But to Saturday, and what was potentially a very, very awkward Scottish Cup tie at Ross County. But Martin, it was handled with a degree of professionalism.
I think that's exactly the best way to describe it, was awkward. Now, despite the fact that we seem to dwarf them in sort of possession and corners and shots and all those sorts of things, it was still only 1-0, which I'm not hugely concerned. I'm hugely concerned about, because it's the cup, you know. It's knockout football. I'm more concerned about just getting through to the next round, and that's the thing. It's, you know, you get it out of the way. A professional job, you get the win, get into the draw. Very happy with the performance, though. I think we did quite well. Lots of chances. No, okay, they're not taken. But I think that what could have been a very sticky tie against Ross County, which we've came unstuck against them before, we managed to come through it relatively unscathed.
Gavin, nitpicking slightly here, Martin speaks about being lots of chances, but it seemed at the time, and certainly looking back at the highlights, that our main goal-scoring threat, and indeed the goal itself, came from shots from distance. Is it good to see players having the confidence to have a go, or is it a bit worrying that we're not creating better quality chances? And what does it say about the lone striker system that we're currently playing?
I think it's quite an interesting question. I mean, they had all the ball on Saturday. We had 61% possession, and they afforded players such as Ash Taylor to get forward a bit more and start attacking moves from a bit deeper. But I do take the point that we could be a bit more creative, but I think that's quite a long-term issue. We're not really moving around in the attacking positions quite well enough to make so many chances. But you also see, like, the players are playing with real confidence. You've got McGinn, for example. I think you saw him teeing himself up for a 30-yarder and testing the keeper that way, and then, of course, Shea's goal. So I think the boys are confident, and they know they're going to get a goal sooner or later if they keep the ball and keep looking for spaces in behind.
Martin, Scott Fox, the Ross County keeper, came out of the match with a lot of plaudits from Saturday. Fairly routine saves, I reckon, in most cases. But there's a bit of worry that, again, that the chances that we did create, Adam Rooney wasn't on the end of any of them.
No, he wasn't. That is a worry. I mean, Scott Fox was clearly man of the match by a country mile as well, despite the fact that he was on the losing side. It is a little worrying that Rooney's... No, Rooney is, so he's really off form at the moment. I'm still of the thought that if Rooney's fit, then he should play, because I think he is our best option up front. But it does start to become a worry. I think if the other players in the side weren't playing so well, for example, if Johnny Hayes came down with an injury, if McGinn came down with some really horrible lack of form, I think we'd then start to worry. But at the moment, it does seem to be that at times we are kind of carrying Rooney a little bit. That's me saying that, so we know fine that what's going to happen in a couple of days is he's going to bang a hat-trick in, isn't he?
Well, that's really just what I was about to say, that different opponents have different strengths and weaknesses, and he is just as likely to turn up with a hat-trick if penalty box strikes on Wednesday or Sunday. But it is, Gavin, the first season really since he joined where there's a bit of cause for concern about his numbers, about the goals he scored from open play, about his NPG 90, which we've referenced a couple of times on here, but that's net non-penalty goals per 90 minutes. And in the limited time that Jaden Stockley's had on the park, and he's taken a lot of criticism during that time, he's actually got a better MPG 90 than Adam Rooney.
Well, yeah, but I think also the scoreline is obviously what's the most important thing. And when you start with the front three of Rooney, Hayes and McGinn, it's getting results. And whether or not it's Rooney himself that's sticking the ball in the net or another player, I think the balance of the team is maybe a little bit better with Rooney and the other two starting. I remember back as well to Ibrox when Stockley started and he had that golden chance. And had he taken that, we probably would have walked away there with 3 points as well. So I think it's a bit concerning that he's not scoring. But at the same time, I don't see him missing chances here, there and everywhere. I'm happy to stick with him for now because I agree. You never know, this week he could score two or three.
Well, I think that probably is the consensus amongst those of us here in the podcast, and indeed probably the wider Aberdeen support. But you do just wonder that clearly Derek McInnes' preferred formation is always going to be that one-man lone striker. You do just wonder if there's maybe a potential upgrade at some point. But obviously Adam Rooney's contracted here for another 3 years, so hopefully he's sticking in goals for Aberdeen for a lot longer to come. Martin, you spoke about Scott Fox being the man of the match. Contenders in red, Shea Logan obviously for his goal. But maybe Ash Taylor. I mean, twice during the course of the match, he turned midfield playmaker. Nice little run forward and inside pass to Niall McGinn in the first half prior to that effort which Scott Fox tipped over. And then a running cross for Andy Considine's header in the second half. As well as being obviously very solid in what he had to do defensively. And afternoons like that, he looks frustratingly close to a good SPFL-level defender, doesn't he?
It really does, yeah. I mean, it helps that it was another clean sheet, which something we spoke about last week, which we did criticise him a little bit, but, they're on a run of clean sheets. He does tend to perform a lot better when he doesn't have that much defensive kind of work to do, where the team aren't really stretched at the back. At times he looks really good, and there's clearly a player in there. Whether it's a concentration issue when he's kind of, I don't know, would you say under the cosh, is with the worry that he kind of loses his focus. But you're definitely right. I mean, in terms of our players on Saturday, he was right up there as a contender for being the man of the match.
Gavin, Ash strikes me as somebody who, and indeed maybe defenders as a whole, defensive units as a whole, strike me as people who need that consistency in selection to be able to understand how fellow defenders' game works, how the keeper works. That is now 5 clean sheets in the last 6, and obviously coinciding with the settled team for the last 8 games.
Yeah, I think so. I think Taylor, I agree with absolutely everything Martin was saying there. I think when Taylor is comfortable and he's not under so much pressure, I think that's when he starts to shine a bit, because he's not focusing too much, or his concentration is not tested so often. And I think it's quite a good sign that he's coming out of defence and he's got the ball at his feet and he's starting attacking moves. Like, if you saw back to the Celtic game a few weeks ago, their centre backs had a lot of the ball, and they had the possession, they were starting moves, they were charging forward from time to time, just doing 1-2s with Scott Brown or somebody like that. And I think this is how McInnes has to evolve the team as well. So you need somebody that has that ability on the ball to start the moves from the back, and Taylor, I think he does that very well. And if he keeps doing that, then it's less defending for him, I'm hoping.
Well, we did speak about that sort of thing last week with relation to Partick Thistle and how they prefer a high press and were basically pressing down on the centre half's easy out balls. So different opponents make our own players different players, and our team looks slightly better because they have different strengths and qualities. It seems odd to maybe focus on our goalkeeper in a game in which he hasn't had very much to do, Gavin. One save to make just after we scored, dealt with it well. But for me, the really key element was right on full time. Just a long looping ball from the halfway line, which Ross County launched into a box. And total assuredness from Joe Lewis coming out and claiming that ball. And just such a contrast to some of the past inheritors of that number one jersey.
Absolutely. I think you see him, he's just confidence. You don't have that sort of worry like when Langfield goes up to catch the ball in the last minute against Motherwell or something. What's going to happen next? He just has that confidence in himself, and he takes the pressure off the defence so many times. And even he's even shown at the weekend he's got a bit of karate in him. Striker if they're getting a bit cheeky. So I'm full of praise for him.
Martin, we'll come to you on that. If that had been an outfield player, it's probably a red card, isn't it?
Yeah, goalkeepers get away with everything, don't they?
Tend to, yes.
So goalkeepers get all the decisions. He got the ball first, so I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. It was a 70-40 in his favour, so no red card for me.
Your mathematics definitely don't qualify you to talk about stats later in the show, that's for sure. 70-40s?
That was the joke.
I don't believe it was, Martin. I think it was just a severe miscalculation. Anyway, moving on to the opponents in the next round. The draw was made, obviously, after the games yesterday. And it was an exceptionally dull draw. Basically, the four teams who would be considered the four favourites in the competition have got the other four sides. And they all have home draws. So definitely not a fix that the club from Govan have achieved their 11th straight domestic cup tie at home. That's definitely likely. It's as likely as any other combination, I suppose, really, if you want to get down to the mathematical probability. But we ended up with Partick Thistle at home. Familiar opponents, obviously, just here the other week. And because of that, we know that it's not going to be a straightforward afternoon, is it, Gavin?
Well, yeah. I mean, returning to a point we were making earlier there, like, it took us a long time to break them down. And eventually we gambled and went for broke a bit there by putting on Stockley and Christie. And that turned the game for us. But on another day, if you make that change where you take off two defensive players and to bring on two attacking players, it can turn against you as well. So let's hope the boys can see to it a bit quicker than that.
Martin, cliche time, home draw. You got to be happy with that at least.
We could have got worse draws, and we could have obviously got a lot easier draws as well. I'm more than happy that we've got Partick. It could be a hell of a lot worse. Confident that we can get past them. I mean, we've beaten them already at home, so I think we've got enough to get by them.
Indeed, well, we've actually beaten them 3 times out of 3 in the league this season. Let's hope it's not an unexpected bump come March the 4th. So, the elephant in the room all this weekend has been the management situation emerging from Ibrox on Friday night. In order to avoid being asked the obvious questions, Derek McInnes put Tony Docherty in front of the non-Red TV media on Saturday evening. And may well do the same at tomorrow's pre-match press conference at Pittodrie. It certainly wouldn't surprise me. I don't see it happening for a number of reasons, quite frankly. But Gavin, what do you reckon? McInnes to Ibrox?
I always have this kind of doomsday scenario in my head. You've got like players like Jack that are out of contract in the summer, and he's coming onto a bit of the game recently. I think when McInnes looks at it, he's going to think he's probably done everything he can, especially if he finishes second again and gets to another cup final. I think that would show another very good season. I think as well, I'm hoping really that he doesn't make the move there. I think as he is, although I'm gonna be public enemy number one here, but he is like an ex-Rangers player and probably sights that way in his younger days, but It wouldn't be the biggest surprise to me if he ended up there. Although I think he's probably got his eyes in England if I think about it deeply enough.
Martin, they're skint, aren't they? They can't afford him.
Well, that's the big question is they don't have the money. Is there not talk of they had a £30 million war chest or something and they spent £18 million of it, something like that, and their best player is still Kenny Miller? So make of that what you will. I don't think there's any chance of him going. Even if you want to look at it the most negative possible way, is McInnes going to look at that kind of job? What has he got from going down there? He's already his reputation tarnished a little bit with the Bristol City time he had down there. McInnes is. No, we've spoken in this podcast about McInnes being a cautious manager. Is he going to be the kind of manager to take a risk by going to a club that have been just a complete shambles for the last 4 years? I mean, despite the fact that, you know, there may be some kind of boyhood pull there because he was a supporter and he played for them, I don't think there's any chance he would go there. The press conference was simply for the fact I just think he couldn't be arsed answering the questions because he knew what would be coming and anything he said would be twisted.
I think, that, Gavin, the other thing to add on to what you said earlier was that mid-season in particular, I mean, yes, they'll sell 30-odd thousand season tickets to gullible people, but right now they're relying on payday loans, the equivalent of payday loans, to get through the season. So you can't see it happening now, for certain.
I don't see McInnes moving right now. I think the club, like he wouldn't be moving to a team with a better chance of ending the season strongly than the Dons. I think at the end of the season, I think there is potential for McInnes to move on. I think there's every chance that we could be having a season of rebuilding at Pittodrie, and whether he believes that it's worth, you know, the risk of tarnishing his past results, I'm not so sure. Obviously, I would hope that he'd be given the resources to build a team further. But with Celtic so strong at the moment, I just don't see him thinking there's a chance to really maintain a challenge there next season as well.
So Martin, in that case, where are the ambitions lying then? I mean, if Celtic are this obstacle in your way, it is pretty much impossible to try and bridge that gap over 38 games, isn't it? You can maybe knock them out of a cup competition. I know a lot of people were actually hoping that we drew Celtic at home in the quarterfinal, probably correctly assuming that no one else is going to be capable of doing us a favour.
Yep.
His stated aim at the start of the season was to make the group stage of the Europa League. Didn't really get any further than he's done the last 2 years. Is it Europe that really holds the key to his serious ambitions if he were to still be at Pittodrie next season?
I think it might have to be. Completely agree with you about the league there. You know, we pushed them as far as we possibly could the past couple of seasons before the side had just run out of steam. Helped in part by the fact that, you know, if we're being completely honest with ourselves, Ronnie Dyla was a bit of a fraud of a manager. They've now got a manager who is more than capable. They've signed some players who are, in truth, you know, for the standard of Scottish football, you know, they're probably playing beneath their level. And guys like Sinclair and Dembele. So I think that for McInnes, I think he would look at that and say, you have to put up as much a challenge in the league as you can. That obviously goes without saying. Because no matter whether you're, you know, Inverness Cali sitting at the bottom of the league or you're Celtic, you go in every competition thinking you have a chance of at least winning it. Or else you're admitting defeat and you might as well just give up. So I think McInnes is the kind of manager who would say, we need to push them as far as we possibly can, and we will. I mean, we're obviously a country mile behind them in the league, and there's no chance of catching them. The Cup's a brilliant opportunity, and as you say, who else would be knocking them out of the Cup? Maybe Hearts, if Hearts maybe got them at Tynecastle, there's possibly an opportunity there. Rangers aren't going to lay a glove on them. No, wouldn't fancy if Hibs got past the Edinburgh Derby. Wouldn't fancy Hibs doing anything. So it's going to have to be us, really. And I understand why people want them at Pittodrie. It's our best chance of beating them. But yeah, he has to be looking at for next season his target of getting past that third stage where we've stumbled the past couple of seasons. I think getting past that and getting into the Europa League, getting the group stages would be a phenomenal achievement. And I know it's not a trophy. You laugh at teams like Arsenal for winning the fourth place trophy in England. It's a kind of thing that getting through there financially is huge for the club, and it would be huge for Derek McInnes, and it would be huge for a lot of the supporters as well.
Well, far be it for us to stick up for the Celtic manager, but Ronnie Dyla did manage 92 points with Celtic in 2014-15 and 86 last season. So it would have needed a formidable points total from whoever wanted to wrestle the title, even if you don't reckon he was up to much as a manager. The fact is that Celtic only lost 3 games while the league was still alive last year, 2 of them to us, 1 of them to Motherwell. So it was always going to be tough, and tougher still because, again, it's the other sides aren't really in a position to lay a glove on them. This is very changed days from the 1980s. But enough about the situation at Ibrox and how that might impact us. Let's move on to the game on Wednesday and take 2 against Motherwell. Having kept the same team for 8 games in a row, we know for certain there's going to be changes on Wednesday. For starters, Graham Shinney is out suspended, so that's one definite change. There's also been talk of Mark Reynolds possibly having picked up some ankle ligament damage on Saturday when he was forced to come off and be replaced by Anthony O'Connor. First of all, let's deal with the known situation, Gavin. Who comes in for Shinney? Do you expect it to be Ryan Christie and Kenny McLean to move further back, or do you expect a further rejig?
I think McKinnessy, he likes to use a core of players, and it would be a very good way to include Christie in the team. And McLean has played that role pretty well in the past, kind of being able to start moves and get forward as well. He'll lack the sort of competitive edge that Shinney maybe brings in the middle of the park. But I don't think Motherwell, based on our other games against them, is something that is overly necessary in that match. I think we'll get a lot of the ball again and have another attacking player on the pitch. I think it's something welcome for that match.
Martin, it is really hard to know what to make of Motherwell, who, well, as with most of the teams in the bottom seven right now, and yes, we're saying bottom seven, both Scott McDonald and Carl McHugh are likely to be suspended for them on Wednesday. And obviously Scott McDonald's been a nuisance to us in the past. What's your take on things?
I think McDonald will be missing, so they will definitely miss his absolute shithouse up front. Great, because I can't stand him. You never know which kind of Motherwell side is going to turn up. They're really kind of struggling at the moment as well. You look at their results. You know they took a pasting from Hearts. Okay, they got a decent result against Ross County, but then it's really draws and defeats all over the place. And that bottom seven is just a mess at the moment. I mean, no, any, you look at that and you think any side out of that bottom seven is going to finish second last. I think obviously you're looking at Cali to finish last. I think we've got more than enough to beat them convincingly, to be totally honest with you. You were talking about the changes earlier on. For me, it'll be as simple as I think Christie will just come in for Shinney. No, the other option would perhaps be Peter Pollitt, but despite the fact he's played a lot of minutes under Derek McInnes, Pollitt seems to have, he's no longer in favour at all. So I don't think there'll be any real surprise there. I think it'll be Christie straight in for Shinney.
I don't think he's entirely out of favour to the point where he's ostracised. Dirk McInnes' post-match with Red TV on Sunday spoke about potentially bringing him or Christie on. And obviously, he started pre-Christmas against Kilmarnock. Gavin, Motherwell's away record is actually marginally better than their home record. 13 points away from home against 11 at home. They've also conceded considerably less on the road than they have at home, just 16 against 23. I don't know, but Mark McGee's teams usually cause us a few problems.
Yeah, that's a very surprising statistic, because I'm sure, like, in past seasons, it's been their home form that's been the more dominant form. I just don't think they're going to be consistent enough against us. We're playing too well at the moment, and Even last time, when it looked a very tricky fixture away from home, it was 3-1, and it was a dominant 3-1 as well. We looked in control of things, even though, like, you could say we were defending a little bit at the end there. But I don't think if they couldn't beat us at Fir Park, I don't think they're going to turn up without Scott McDonald, especially, and turn us over this week. We're just playing too well, I think.
Martin, you spoke about Motherwell's inconsistency, and indeed that is true of probably any of the teams from six downwards. But one thing they have been consistent about is if they've played a team in the top four, they've lost every single game they've played, all 8 of them. Every other side in the league has taken at least 1 point against the top four at the moment: Celtic, Aberdeen, the Rangers, and Hearts. So again, it's strikes me as curiously different from past Motherwell teams. Like, again, we spoke about Celtic losing only 3 live games last season. One of them was to Mark McGee's Motherwell at home. So it seems to be a curious form has turned on its head there.
I think so. I mean, I think you look, Motherwell were one of those sides that, you know, you look back, you know, in previous seasons and they were always capable of getting a decent result against a big team. I don't think that's, you know, a factor of their play anymore. I mean, you look at them, they got, you know, their cup result against Rangers a couple of weeks ago, was just the game at Ibrox was just embarrassing, where they threw it away. There's a lack of concentration. They're very poor defensively, which I think has undone them several times this season. When on the few times I've been able to watch a full 90 minutes of theirs, it's really defensive lapses that have gotten in the way that have ruined their kind of a chance for a positive result. I mean, maybe it's just the style of football that they play now. McGee's got them playing a certain way that, I don't know, maybe the bigger teams just are able to dispatch them a little bit easier now. It's kind of curious, yeah.
Well, let's hope there's a decent turnout at Pittodrie on Wednesday night. I know it's a midweek at a dreadful time of year. There's competing attentions as far as the Champions League being live on Wednesday night as well. But I think right now this team probably does deserve your support. No, they're not going to win the league. But, you know, we probably weren't going to win the league last season, let's be realistic about it, or the season before. But there is a prize to be fought for there, and let's hope there is a decent turnout on Wednesday, and indeed all the remaining league games, because they're actually a good watch this season. They've really evolved from what was a very pragmatic side in the early Derek McInnes years to a very forward-thinking side in most cases. So our guest this week, Gavin Mayer, as we said at the outset, Gavin has his blog, which attempts to look at sport through a statistical prism. A lot of tennis stuff on there, Gavin. That's obviously another passion of yours.
Yes. Before I was working in the European Parliament, I was actually a tennis journalist. I've got this. The thing that really got me into that sport was I was born the exact same day as Andy Murray, so I'm kind of trying to, you know, prove that I can be as successful as him. He's got a slight edge of me at the moment, but
yeah, never know. Yeah. But you know, it is only 3 Grand Slams to nil, so you've
Federer can win one at 36. And I've still got time.
Well, precisely. You might struggle to reach his Masters tally, but Grand Slams you can probably catch him.
Oh, I may bother.
But you have done some work on Scottish football before, and obviously your passion is the Dons, but there was a piece about Scottish football managers and the length of time that the first manager sacked tends to go, and that made it into the Courier, I think.
Yeah, that made it into the Courier. They were particularly interested in that because Paul Hartley was the bookies' favourite to lose his job at the time of writing that. I think it was around September time, and I statistically it had shown that usually after 9 or 10 weeks the first manager to leave their job will happen around that time. But actually it was Robbie Nielsen who was the first manager to leave around December. So this season it's been a bit of an outlier statistically, because the there's usually a bit more of a managerial movement before then. I actually had Nielsen as being one of the least likely to move, because I thought, yeah, he's not really got that much about him. But
yeah, it does strike me there's been a bit more stability about the managerial situation at a lot of clubs in the SPFL than there has been in a number of years, and certainly there would be down south for absolute certain. But what we wanted to speak about tonight with you, Gavin, was about second place. Certainly since the introduction of the 12-team SPL / SPFL, roughly the sort of points totals that we should be looking at for to guarantee second place. Now, obviously, for a few of those years, you had 2 teams way ahead at the top. So first, second was were on the same points totals, and they very often went through seasons barely losing a game to without losing to each other, that is. So that maybe skews things somewhat, does it?
It does skew things. So I decided I would have a look at the issue over the last 5 seasons, so that would be going back to the start of 2011-2012, and that was the season that Rangers finished 73 points, but they've got this word liquidated next to them. So in that season, they finished second. They did so with a points total that would actually have only put them ahead of the Dons two times in the last 5 years. So I think that says something about the strength of Aberdeen, especially under McInnes.
So we know our own points totals over the last few years. And again, one of Derek McInnes' stated targets has been to try and beat that total each season. In his first full season, he managed 68 points and was obviously pipped for second place on the final day. Second season, his most successful in terms of picking up points, 75. Then down to 71 last season. We're currently starting 43 points with the same points per game, which would get you to 71 roughly. But obviously that's a slightly patchy first half of the season we're through now. Is 75 points a kind of a target to be aiming for, or maybe slightly lower than that?
Well, you have a lot of teams that are around each other in the league at the moment. There's a 9-point gap between us and St. Johnstone. We're in 43 points at the moment, and they have 34 points. And as you were saying there, we have a points per game total at the moment of 1.86. So if we were to carry that on until the rest of the season, it would take us to 75 points. And given that the Rangers, even in 2011, and you can't say it's the same strength of team now, which is obviously partly the reason why Warburton is Scotty's P45. But I would still argue that that's a strong group of teams in there, Aberdeen, Rangers, Hearts and St Johnstone. And if you were to look at it in a mini-league, the Dons, they come out on top of that as well. On average, when we've played either any of those three teams, the Dons have an average of 1.5 points per game, whereas St Johnstone would be second, 1.33 points, and Rangers and Hearts are 1.14 points. And I think that's going to be very important when it comes to the top six split, which has been a bit of a problem for Aberdeen in the last few years, where our form has kind of tailed off, be it because Celtic have already taken the league, or we were already pretty secure of second. I don't think we can get away with that this year. But I think the signs are there that we have the form. Like over the last eight games, we've made 16 points compared to Rangers 14 or Hearts 10. And I think it's the way that we're playing, and if we can keep that consistency, we have to be the favourite team to finish second again.
So, as you said there, we're 9 points ahead of St Johnstone right now. Could go 12 points ahead on Wednesday if we win our game in hand on them. Would you discount them, or would you discount Hearts, who would also be 9 points behind us from the race then for second? Or do you still think they've got a shot?
I don't think you can rule them out, St Johnstone. They're such a dangerous team. I mean, it was only 2 weeks ago that they had a strong position against Celtic before the referee intervened. But I think the conventional wisdom is that they are the weakest of the four teams in that sort of mini group. And their points totals of the last few seasons indicates that they're bound to drop off a little as the season closes. They had 56 points last season, 57 the season before that. And those are their two best seasons for a long time. So the Dons are on course to get 70-plus points. So St Johnstone, I think you can probably rule them out. Hearts, I think there's a sign they're maybe picking things up and getting things together under Cathro, but his form is not being convincing. I mean, he picked four of his first possible 18 points up, and even when he won his last two league games, he goes and draws a home to Hibs this weekend, a team in the lower league. Yes, it's a derby, but there's just something that says it's just not going as well as the theory of his appointment was meant to bring. And as for Rangers, I mean, what's going on there? I mean, you can't say that they've changed all that much in terms of their leadership style. Like Warburton's departure this week, it's got Jim Traynor's fingerprints all over it. What on earth's happening behind the scene there? So you look at the total of points Cathro brought in since he was a boy of the Hearts, and who's to say that a new appointment at Rangers won't be able to better that. I think it's a very risky time to par with your manager, and unless they have something lined up their sleeves, there's no reason to think that they're going to suddenly become this team that only the West Coast media seem to see.
So let's look at the raw numbers, Gavin. So over the last 5 years, what's the average points total for the team that's finished second?
You're testing me here. I never added them all up. but you'd be looking around the 70 to 73 points mark.
Okay, and you think that might be dragged down a little this year because there's four teams who are all capable of taking points off each other?
Yes, I think that's quite a decent point to make. The Dons are on course to get that points total, and I think as you guys discussed in a previous week, we've already played Celtic an extra time than the other teams around us, which of course it is a little bit maybe defeats to say that, but it's one game where you're starting to think the Dons are not going to take points from. So I'm very positive about how we're going to end this season, and if we keep up our form, I think we're absolutely the best position to finish second now.
Well, thanks for that, Gavin. It's been very interesting. Gone are the days when we would all be looking at the 45-point total to achieve the top six after 33 games. In fact, to be honest, we might clinch a top six place on Sunday if we were to beat Kilmarnock and other results went in our way, which would, of course, really emphasise the difference between the two regimes. And every time we do play Kilmarnock, we bring out the old one every single game we've played against them under Derek McInnes' stat, currently sitting at 12-12. And every time we do, someone on Twitter tells us to be quiet, because as if we'll be to blame when we inevitably draw or lose against them. Martin, do you think there's a possibility of that day coming on Sunday?
I don't want to be that guy who gets the blame, but not a chance. I just can't see it at all. I mean, you look at Kilmarnock, and while they are sitting sixth, though, we've already mentioned how close that bottom seven are. You know, they're a wrong set of results away from dropping down to, you know, 10th place. They lost their best player in the transfer window. They've brought in people like Connor Salmon, which kind of tells you everything about how they're going to try and play football. There's no such thing as easy games at SPFL. I don't want to kind of give it that kind of chat of, oh, we'll just turn up and steamroll them, because that's just not going to happen. But we are a far, far superior football side to them. We've been able to play them off the park before, and I don't see why we shouldn't be able to do it again.
Gavin, we'll give you the opportunity to get a moan in about this, but the kickoff time on Sunday is at 1 o'clock, which is immediately an atmosphere killer, notwithstanding the fact that the tide is 170 miles away from Aberdeen. You obviously live in Belgium right now. Are they plagued with ridiculous kickoff times imposed on them by TV companies as well?
You get fixtures spread across the weekend. You have matches that start on Friday evenings, you get matches on Saturday afternoon and matches on Sunday evenings, but like I live near to Brussels, and in Brussels you can be like in Paris in an hour and a half, or you could be in Amsterdam in an hour and a half, or Cologne in an hour and a half. So the distance to travel is nothing like we have in Scotland. You're not travelling 170 miles to go and watch Anderlecht versus Bruges, you know? So I think it's just a little bit of a nonsense that our fans are being asked to trawl themselves down to Ayrshire for that time on a Sunday. If you look at the Belgian league, it's a similar sized country, and it just doesn't happen here.
Martin, one of the things that I was encouraged at, perhaps reading between the lines, a couple of weeks ago, some SPFL representatives, I think all the chairman actually of the clubs in the SPFL Premiership, went down and apparently spoke and had a day with BT, and they spoke also with representatives from the Rugby Union Premiership, the English Premiership, and they spoke about the importance of actually creating a relationship between the two. The Premiership in England, they have a fixed kickoff time. It's an okay kickoff time too. It's Sunday at 3 o'clock, I think. Surely it makes more sense in any future TV deal to tie ourselves down to one broadcaster where possible, but to get kickoff times that don't make fans have to leave their house at 7 a.m. on a Sunday morning. And the other thing about those early kickoffs is they are just atmosphere killers.
I mean, I'd be completely happy if BT Sport had the package for all the Scottish football, to be honest. Now, I don't think we need to criticise Sky any more than we already have. The way they treat Scottish football is absolutely disgusting. I suppose it is what it is, and you know, if we want the money, we'll have to take it at the moment. But I'm glad that there was obviously this open forum where the club spoke to these people, and they're hopefully going to realise that, you know, it's all very well. You know, what kind of message does it send for their product when you're looking at empty stadiums? You're looking at games where they're maybe showing like a Hamilton game or whatever, or a game at Partick when there's, you know, and unless they're showing, you know, it's Celtic involved, there's nobody there. There'll be a decent Dons travel and support. We usually take, despite the inconvenient time, there's usually between about 900 to 1,000. I would probably expect the same again, because there's obviously a lot of Dons fans based down Glasgow way as well. But it is insulting. Unfortunately, it's just something we have to kind of suck it up at the moment. But in the future, I'd much prefer it to change. Ideally, you know, I think I've mentioned this to you before, Richard. I'd much prefer to go down the idea of having an online kind of subscription service for Scottish football. But that is, you know, we are so backward in this country, that is about a million years away. I'll be long gone from this planet before we ever see that. So at the moment, if I had my way, I would just sack off Sky and we could have BT, who seem to treat Scottish football with a little bit more respect.
Now, Gavin, the run of games we have coming up to the split, they look fairly enticing. Obviously, the law of averages says we will drop points along the way, but each game, taking on its own merits, looks winnable, he says, obviously inviting defeat on Sunday.
I don't have that issue with the Dons team. I mean, look at our form, like, recently. McInnes has stopped chopping and changing the team, and it has made a difference on the park. So, if you're not going to chop and change before every game, then surely every game will be winnable. There's no need to experiment. We've got a winning formula there. Let's go with that, and I think we'd be favourite in the majority of those matches that are still to come.
Martin Lee Clark, Kilmarnock manager. I think he's going after two records this season. Firstly, the most number of loan signings that you can bring in 1 year, because it's just a revolving door down there at Rugby Park. Secondly, the most immobile strike force that the world has ever seen. Connor Salmon and Chris Boyd are going to be stinking up the pitch on Sunday. Heaven help us if we lose to a strike partnership like that.
Yeah, that's part of the reason why I'm so confident, to be honest. You know, We sang the praises a little bit of Ash Taylor earlier on. You know, depending on if we think Reynolds is going to make it in time for Wednesday, maybe never mind Sunday as well. You know, O'Connor will come in. As much as Chris Boyd is, he knows where the goal is and all this wee Boydy kind of nonsense that the press like to feed us. Let's be honest, he's finished. Even if they get a goal against us, we're going to score against that team. I mean, They're nothing special at all. I mean,
okay, I want the Chris Boyd is finished on the record for when he nails a first half hat trick on Sunday. So, gentlemen, thank you very much for your time this weekend. Thank you, Martin, for being so utterly dismissive of both Motherwell and Kilmarnock.
No problem.
And thank you, Gavin, for your analysis of the race for second.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
We'll be back next week with reaction to the games against Motherwell and Kilmarnock. Hope to join you then. Good night.